The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So hello and welcome now to the sixth talk on the general topic of love. And the idea is for this beginning of the year to slowly go through a series of talks and exploration of love, especially love as it's taught in Buddhism and how it's part of Buddhist practice. And for the beginning, I want to do kind of a general introduction to the topic. And for this week, I want to emphasize that how important it is to become wise about what interferes with love, to become wise with some of the ways in which we get caught in resentments or guilt or anger or hurt or identification, that we want to be very careful that we're not going into this topic of love, of kindness, of compassion with as a way to ignore or push away or push underground the difficult emotions we have that maybe are the opposite of love or you don't associate with love. The kind of love we're looking for in Buddhism is inclusive. It is not meant to be a bypass. It's not meant to be avoidance. It's meant to be something that can hold even what is difficult. Even if there's hate that we feel, there is amazingly a capacity to hold that with kindness, to hold that with a kind of a love, a kind of a gentleness or tenderness that is neither accepting nor rejecting the hate. It does something radically different. It allows it to be there in the field of awareness, so it has no power over us, but also a power which is either for or against. If we're trying to get rid of something too intensely, we're kind of caught in its grip. And if we try to get rid of it because we don't like it, we're also somehow caught in it. The mindfulness practice we're doing is a whole other way of working through all these things. Not to allow hate to continue, for example, not to allow it to have a power and we live and act from it, but for some deeper healings, a new, different possibility. And that possibility is to be able to love, to hold with care and kindness, respect all things, so that our hearts, our social arts, our way of being in the world can find a way to healing, find a way to resolving, can find room for the deeper, more integral aspects, wholesome aspects of ourselves to grow and replace the hate. As the Buddha said, hate is never overcome by hate, but by love alone is hate overcome. This is the ancient teaching. This is the ancient truth. And so the idea is to, how do we live wisely with all these things that are difficult, so that the love has really a tremendous value because it can hold those difficulties as well. So the first thing I want to say is that a very useful part about mindfulness practice is the way that it helps us to not identify with our experience. No matter what our experience is, we don't build a self from it. We don't define the self by it. We don't assume that the self is me, that this is me, these things. And of course, it's not someone else. And it's not meant to be coldly impersonal. There's respect for everything. But the way we respect it profoundly is to leave it alone in this context, so that we can trust the deeper movements, what can arise and surface from the depth of inside of ourselves. There is a movement towards healing and a movement towards wholeness and wholesomeness within us, for no other reason to emphasize than all the unwholesome movements, all the challenging ways in which we feel and have emotions and thoughts are a form of tension and stress. And there's a natural movement to that which is not stressful, not tense. And that's not a nothing. That's the source for the generative arising, growing of that which is not stressful, not tense, which is closely related to things like love and kindness and compassion. So to learn not to identify, to allow things to, allow a thought to be, but not assume because a thought, I'm thinking it, I am my thinking. When people identify strongly with their thoughts, every thought is important. Every thought should be believed. Every thought is real. And the thought defines us. The thought tells us what we should believe and who we are. And some people have a lot of thoughts that are very self-critical. And those thoughts, self-critical thoughts, then are supposed to be believed, and it, we identify with it. These thoughts are true. Some people have delusions of grandeur, and they identify with the thoughts that tells them how wonderful they are. And the idea is to not identify, in a sense, but to step back, to get a bird's eye view of it all. Oh, here's a thinking mind. This is a mind with these thoughts. This is awareness of these thoughts. And the awareness begins freeing up that movement of narrowing down, defining, being something, believing it, being pushed around, believing that if one thought is had, I should have the next thought, or I should repeat the same thought. I have to keep telling myself the same thing. The same thing with emotions. Some people identify with their emotions, and if they say emotions are what is true, the emotions is who they are. So if they have an emotion, that's where they have to act on and do or be or see the world through them. And there can be a lot of momentum in emotions and a lot of assertiveness sometimes in emotions. So emotions carry with them desires. And so certain kinds of anger is to want something to happen. Certain kinds of happiness and joy want something to happen. And then we, so because the force of that, the desire of it, we identify it. This is who I am. This, I'm that force. I'm these emotions. These are just natural functionings of the human being. Naturally, we have thoughts. That's what the mind is made to do. Naturally, we have emotions. Of course, they're happening to us, but we don't have to add on top of them, this is me, this defines me, this limits me, this is who I am. So we see, but we don't add anything extra. And there's a number of ways of kind of appreciating this or sensing this, and that is, there's a feeling of spaciousness around it. And there's, we make space, we give breathing room to all things. Some people identify very strongly with what feels pleasant and unpleasant, with the pleasure and pain. And that's their orientation. Everything's about navigating this world of pleasure and pain, because that's who I really am, or who I really am is the person who's the receiver of pleasure and pain. And so I have to kind of constantly fix it and change it and look for the pleasure, avoid the pain, and because that's what defines who we are. Neither accepting nor rejecting any pleasure or pain, but the space around it, spaciousness, the breathing room around it, breathing room around thoughts, the bird's eye view. Or there could be a stillness. We find a still place, still a quiet, calm place within from which to know, where we see, but we don't get caught. Or we have a kind of inner silence, And it may be the inner silence, that way in which you can be aware without thought. That shows us something about how not to identify and define. We don't have to be anything. We don't have to be anyone in this practice. And the reason to emphasize this is because this spaciousness, this stillness, this non-identification makes the room, makes space, makes time, makes it possible for the kind warmth, kindness, care, compassion to be all-inclusive. Almost like it's a glow of light that radiates out, that anything it touches, the light, anything the light lands on in the room is lit up. The light doesn't differentiate. If there's no light in the room, it's dark. Then everything is very close in. But when the light, maybe it's a very large room, and have all the space in the room for all the things in the room that the light falls on, and the light doesn't differentiate. But now whole new possibilities are possible in the light that's not possible in the dark. So, as we have this kind of non-identifying awareness, all kinds of new possibilities. And one of those possibilities is the light, the warmth of kindness can fall on all things. And how this is beneficial for us personally is that rather than being at war with parts of ourselves, rather than being attached to part of ourselves, we can hold all that we are in a field of kindness, in a field of care or compassion, a field of love. And so the benefit, the reward from this non-identifying awareness is that there's possibility of a certain kind of love and kindness of all for all things. And this is has its challenges too, because as we hold all things kindly, and some of what we're holding is problematic, something might scream in our head saying, no, I can't love this. That means I'm defined by it. That means that I'm going along with it. That means that it's wrong. If all we're doing is holding it in kindness, holding it and not loving it because it deserves to be loved, but loving it, being kind to it, because that's who we are. That's what comes with this awareness. That's what comes with knowing. It's just good for us to be kind. Whether the thing deserves it is besides the point here in this practice. Hold it in kindness. But you'll learn that so much more of the wonderfulness of life, the benefits of life, the healing of life, the restoration of goodwill and good relationship happens in this all-encompassing kindness and love. It's a phenomenal power. And be careful that you don't succumb to identifying anything that takes you out of it. Find a way in your life, find a safe situation and circumstance, maybe meditation, maybe simple things when you're home or simple places when you're out on the street walking around with people, to not judge, to not get caught in identifying with anything or identifying anyone as being something. See if you can allow for an inner stillness, spaciousness, so you can gaze upon all things kindly. Be still and gaze upon all things kindly. And as you do that with yourself, maybe you'll become wiser about how you identify with anything, how you make me, myself, and mine, and get caught in self-concern in a way that diminishes the light of love. Thank you.